Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Shut Your Face with your host, me, Bree. Thank you so much for subscribing to this and listening to this and being supportive of this. It means the absolute world. It's the coolest thing ever. So thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hey.
Nice to meet you, Lexi. Thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
Of course.
With this random chick on TikTok. yeah, no, I happened to run across one of your TikToks, and I believe you had Swift. I believe it was Taylor Swift. And you were in the arena.
Probably.
Yeah, and it was, you were doing like this shirt ordeal and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, she's probably really cool. We probably need to talk to her.
I like to have a good time. I'm never without having a lot of fun wherever I go.
Right. Now, you do professional photography for rodeos, pretty much all horse-related events, correct?
Yeah, I have a very fine niche I have found myself in, and that is pretty much like the futurity and derby world and large barrel races like NBHA Vegas, which is where you saw the Taylor Swift video from.
How cool is that? So, and how did you get into photography? Did you just,
So I went to school for film and video as a kid. I did tons of that kind of stuff. And in high school, I really kind of found that through my theater program. And then when I got older, I wanted to get into horseback riding. So I started taking lessons, eventually bought a horse. I did not do horses as a kid, but I was always one of those horse girls. And then eventually taking a barrel racing lesson, I broke my arm. My horse reared up and I went to go grab the saddle horn and I punched it on accident.
Ooh.
Broke my wrist and borrowed a camera from work while some other girls were exercising my horses for me and, you know, taking them to the barrel races. And so I was just taking pictures of my own horse and people were like, hey, can you take a picture of my horse while you're sitting there?
Yeah.
'Cause it's pretty good. And I was like, oh, well, I mean, if everybody's going to ask, like, I'm going to sit here anyway, would you buy it? And they're like, yeah, like, that's what I expect. Aren't you the photographer? And I went, oh, I mean, I can be. And literally
sure.
That day, it was at a barrel race. That day I set up a website and put it together and just made it happen out of nowhere. So it was a really spur of the moment opportunity.
Yeah.
And it's because of barrel racing that came to be.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it was meant to be though.
It really has. I mean, I can kind of follow every moment in my life that brought me to where I'm at in this career. And, you know, some of it are accidents and some of them are on purpose, but I'm very grateful for every single one because this really feels like where I'm meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course, you're always going to have challenges in business. Now, you started in Michigan, right? And now you're in Arizona. So how did that transpire?
So I grew up in Michigan, kind of suburbs of Detroit, and there's not much horse stuff in that specific area.
No.
There are some barns in the middle of Michigan, but there's not a whole lot going on there. And my best friend at the time in high school was going to come out to Arizona for school. And I said, it's different. Let's go. I'll follow you out there. And so I did. And that's there was a barn that gave trail riding. It was a trail riding outfit. They also gave lessons. And so I showed up one day, I walked up, knocked on the door and said, hey, can I clean stalls for ride time or just hanging out? And it took, you know, probably 6 months to a year, but then all of a sudden I was, you know, taking lessons, giving lessons, doing trail riding outfit, you know, guiding the trail rides and stuff. And not that I was any good by any means, but it was just one of those businesses that ran on volunteer time. And it worked out great. And then I moved to California for 6 months to go work on a documentary.
Oh.
And when I came back, I started working for another company. And it was a very corporate job making videos for doctors and things. And it was very boring, but it was able to get me horseback riding lessons and give me an opportunity to purchase a horse. And it got me here.
Yeah, there you go. It's so cool to kind of hear how things transpire like that, because sometimes you do need that that experience on your resume, even though you don't necessarily plan on doing it. But it's cool to show people that you can do, you know, X, Y, and Z or whatever. Because you look very much like, when I saw that TikTok, I'm like, this girl is in her element. Like, this is your element. This, the dirt, all of it, everything, all that is like, yes, where, you know, you see people and you're like, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And some people you're like, I don't know if that fits you.
What are you doing?
But no, I was like, this girl knows what she's doing. So what, I know at some point, I know you're a really busy person, one, two, but when you go and you do these big rodeos, these are big rodeos. These are big, like, barrel races for you. You set up a booth and everything, and people can come pick out their pictures and stuff like that, but you just don't do pictures there. You also do, like, normal, you go to people's houses and do horse pictures like that too, or do you just strictly stick to the events?
So the events is the main bread and butter of my business. Yeah. That really is what gets me looking busy and feeling busy. You know, we travel all over the country. This year we're literally going from the coast of California to Perry, Georgia, and everywhere in between.
Oh, cool.
And that has kind of what has given me the opportunity to kind of grow my business to what it has become. And I did start with just taking photos of friends and going to little local gymkhanas and barrel races and things. And I have friends that were also, you know, who were models and influencers and, you know, that helped me and, you know, needed photos too. And they let me kind of grow with them. And it's just been, you know, kind of a little economy and that we have created amongst ourselves to get to this point. And I work with brands as well. I work with Ranch Dressin' and Cowgirl Tough and Hey Chicks. And I mean, there's a million brands that are always calling me, Ivy's Rose Co., that are saying, hey, you know, can you do pictures? Can you help me build this? Can you do this? And I love this industry so much. And, you know, I'm very girl power. Let's go, whatever I can do to help you, and we'll figure it out, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right. And just a side note, Cowgirl Tough jeans are tough jeans. Like, mine lasted for 10 plus years.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I felt some of my original pairs are a little baggy on me now, but man, they are amazing. I love Cowgirl Tough jeans.
Those jeans, I swear to God, I sold a pair on, like, Facebook the other day, and I was sitting there thinking, like, really, how old are these jeans? And they had to be at least 15 years old, and they don't look like, you know, I mean, they look worn, but it's not like they come apart. And I'm like, Cowgirl Tough jeans.
That's right. They don't have holes in them or nothing.
Yeah. But no, like, they hold up. So now, did you ever, in between this whole building your business and traveling and all this stuff, do you compete too, or did you just completely leave that when you broke your wrist?
So when I broke my wrist, and I was competing for a little while, I took time off, started building it. When I got back to riding, this business was still not my main gig. I was still working a corporate job for a while, taking, you know, barrel racing lessons and things, and going to events. And every minute of my day was taken up. I'd be either riding my horse at my corporate job or at a barrel race taking pictures. And I had a lot of people riding my horse for me at the time, even while I was okay and healed again, just because I could haul my horses there, but I couldn't ride them.
Right.
There was a while where I was, I'd have someone warm up my horse for me. They'd put me like first or last in the drag, and I would hand my camera to someone else who kind of knew what they were doing if they wanted to take pictures of me, but I never required it or anything. I would just, I would set my camera down if I had to.
If you want to.
I would go, yeah. There was always someone who wanted to. And I would go run to the entry gate, hop on my horse, go make a run, and then hop off. That person would go cool down my horse, and then I'd grab my camera and get the next person right behind me.
Oh, wow.
And it was that I just learned very quickly that that was not nice to my horse. I mean, well, it just wasn't fair to my horse. You know, they were sitting there warming up with someone else in a completely different style. And I wanted to be able to spend that time with my horse and not overdo it for them. So now one of my best friends, who is also my trainer, Courtney Morris with CNC, writing and production. She puts on barrel races as well.
Oh, cool.
She goes with me to a lot of events, like the Vegas race I was just at. She was one of the pink things running around in the background too. She goes and she takes my horses for me. She treats them just like her own, and she competes on them too. So also on my TikTok, there's a video of my horse competing in Vegas, running around, and she's the one riding him, and you can me taking pictures.
Yeah. Well, it's always kind of like, I think it's always hard for, because people have always asked me, like, I'm into the industry too. My business is in the industry. And they ask me, well, are you going to show? And I always feel like that's a weird line. Like, it's just a weird line to try to, like, because you don't want to seem like you're not working, but then again, you don't want to seem like you're working too much, and you don't want to think that, you know, it's just a really weird line when you're in it versus competing in it. So it's hard.
It's hard. I mean, I, especially now with the system that I've built, with my old system, it, like, I could get away with it. But now the way I upload as I'm shooting, and the way I'm editing as I'm shooting and doing everything, I would never expect anyone to work as hard as I do for as many hours as I do, because it's insane. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's monotonous and robotic for me now, but I had to build that system to get there. And to, I don't think I could step away and have the expectation for someone to be able to keep up with that, because now I've just done it for so long and it's, you know, second nature to me. I know all these programs in and out. If something crashes, you have to be able to bring it out like that. And I wouldn't expect, you know, the girls who are helping me with horses to be able to, you know, help fix a computer that's crashing, you know?
Right.
And so I have just separated it that if I am working an event, I will not be riding.
Yeah.
I might bring my horses and have Courtney ride them for me.
Yeah.
But that is, and if I can go out for a big drag and say hi to them, that is the highlight of my day. But for the most part, if I'm working, it's separated.
I totally agree. I completely agree. Cause I would tell people that and be like, I don't know if I feel right, like trying to show at the same place that I'm doing business. Like, it feels weird, you know, cause you don't want to offend anybody, and you don't want to be anyways. Now you grew up in Michigan, and you said you didn't grow up around horses. So at what point did you, like, or what happened for you to go, you know what? I'm a horse girl. I need a horse.
My whole life I was a horse girl. I mean, I was that girl with the giant, you know, picture dictionary, like, this is every breed of horse that there ever was, and this is every saddle to exist, and this is, I always knew, and it was never something that I ever doubted in my life or thought, had a second thought of.
Yeah.
I always said, when I have my own, you know, life and adult money, I will have horses, and that's just, it just has to be, you know, there's some of us that it's just there, you have horses. There's no other life to have.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, some people though, like, I've talked to some people and I'm like, so when did you decide that you, like, when was it, what happened for you that you said you had to have a horse? And it's so funny, cause it's kind of like both ends of the spectrum. You either have people that grew up around it their entire life, or you have people that, like, mm-hmm. were never around it, and they were, like, the only person in their family that wanted it. And, you know, it's just, it's fun to hear that, because it's, like, it's either one or the two, and it's so funny.
Yeah, my family was not into horses at all. I mean, I did take riding lessons as a kid, because I begged my parents in, like, third grade for a year, but it was like an hour drive, my parents just didn't have the time to, like, put into it. So one day they were like, Lexi, I'm sorry. We can't do this anymore. It's too much. And oh my gosh, I cried and cried and cried. And, you know, my parents put me in other activities, but it was just never the same. I had, you know, the horses were going to be my life. And I think in fifth grade, I said I wanted to be a barrel racer when I grew up. And I didn't even know what a barrel racer was. I took English lessons.
But now look at you, though. Like, you're taking pictures for barrel racers. So, like...
Yeah.
It works out.
It worked out amazing. Little did I know.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this. As far as, like, the industry is concerned and kind of where you've grown throughout it and progressed throughout it, do you think that it's going to continue to grow as it has grown, or do you think that it's kind of just kind of going to go stagnant? Because I know a lot of people got a lot of hype off of Yellowstone and all that stuff and coming in, not just barrel racers, but all of it, all disciplines. Mm-hmm. Did you kind of see that same growth, and do you think it's going to stay where it's at, or do you think it's going to kind of come back down, or...
I think the industry as a whole with barrel racing is at a very interesting point right now, mm-hmm. where you have the incentive programs, you have the open barrel racers, and this is just really in my world, mm-hmm. and you have the Yellowstone people. It's very trendy right now to be back into horses and whatnot. But there's going to be a shift, and I don't know exactly when we're going to see it. I think we're feeling it already with the incentive programs kind of taking over. I've always said it's kind of like horse racing. There's not too much of a world where it's not premier horse racing.
Right.
It's you don't see the local tracks, you know, showing really. That's its own little world. And then you hear about, Secretariat and the Triple Crown.
Yeah, like, right.
There's a big divide.
Right.
And I kind of have a feeling that there's going to be a big divide coming in barrel racing. And I know that the incentive programs are trying to fill that gap. Like, they don't want that. They don't want a separation. They want everyone to have access and be involved. And so I'm excited to see how that happens and where that goes. And I don't see barrel racing dissolving anytime soon. I think we're going to start seeing people get back into more open events, and maybe the incentives will kind of plateau a little bit.
That was a big discussion, though, the incentives, particularly for barrel racing. That was a big discussion, because I'm not like in it like you are. You are right there in it. But I remember seeing a couple of things on Facebook, and people were just kind of discussing the cost of it. Is it worth it? You've got one like on every corner now. It's like, mm-hmm, what do you mm-hmm. do? You know, and that kind of stretches not only stud owners thin, but, you know, these horse owners thin, like, where do you go? What do you do? I would be so confused.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I have no idea. Because it's a lot.
And it's like, you can only have so many programs. And I mean, you could have a million programs, but then how do you know what is good for you?
Yeah.
And so I think it's on each horse owner to, you know, vote with your wallet kind of deal. Mm-hmm. If you like the incentive programs, buy into it. Go to the race. Invest in that. Do that. If you are someone who stays local, stay local. Go put your money in to go enter the local barrel race that you're in. For me, I work for the incentives. I have an incentive horse who unfortunately had an injury. She's no longer going to be an incentive horse. So I'm like, you know what? I think I'm out of the incentives for me. And I don't really have time to go to those or enter my horses because I'm working them, and yeah. I have decided to make that separation. So for me, I'm investing in my local economy there, where I am going to enter my local barrel races. And, you know, if I'm lucky, I will have my my trainer enter my horses into some bigger barrel races and support those barrel races that I want to go to.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll get to travel and like go to Nolan Waters in California. I think I'll get to go to that this year. But for me,
Cali has a lot of action.
What's that?
California has a lot of action. I don't think people realize, especially East Coast people, because I'm East Coast, and I didn't realize it until I started working with people in California. You know, not to cut you off, but like, you're like, I was like, y'all got some stuff going on out there. There's a lot of cow stuff. You got dressage people out there, and Western dressage, mm-hmm. cowboy dressage people. I didn't in rodeos and stuff. So Cali's got a lot going on out there.
I mean, just in barrel racing alone, the West Coast Barrel Racing Association is an incredible association. If anyone is looking for something on the West Coast, and they cover, Oregon to Arizona, basically, and all that area. And they're a very old school program where they do tons of prizes, points throughout the year, and then they do a huge finals race in Tulare, California, at this beautiful facility. And it's just a really cool old school barrel race. And I did my first one this last year, and I am excited to be a part of it for hopefully, you know, as long as it exists, because it is a really cool program.
Is it pretty out there?
Yeah. It's gorgeous out there.
See? Oh, I would love to visit and just see it, because it would be different, you know, like it would just be different.
For sure.
Yeah. Because East Coast, you probably know this, we just like Georgia, that's the biggest and furthest you're really going to go for barrel racing. Like, it's just not. That's it. So,
yeah.
Because I've been to Perry before, not for barrel racing, but that's. Mm-hmm. Then you have like Florida, which is cow horse kind of country. And then you know,
okay,
English down there or whatever. I'm sure. Have you been to Florida? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then that's kind of.
I have
like
not been. I've been to Florida, but I have not been to the horse facilities in Florida.
Oh, okay.
And I know, like, that new facility that they just built is incredible. I know they've held a couple barrel races there, but it is mostly English high-end facility, which is awesome. And I hope that they invite us, you know, Westerners in a little bit more as much as we can.
Yeah, no, for sure. But right now, that's just really how it is. Like, that's the dynamic of it, you know. So, but no, that's cool that you get to go to California and do all of that kind of stuff. I was going to ask you something else, but I forgot what it was. You were going to California. I had a train of thought there. Good thing I can edit this. for sure. Do you do videos?
I do. So actually, what kind of, I think what, where people got to know me the most is very early on in Lexi Smith Media, we started this thing called Ghost Videos, and I was not the original creator.
I think somebody told me about this. It.
What was that?
Somebody told me about this. I had a girl on, she mentioned it, and I didn't get a chance to go find it because I have no idea, but she explained this to me. So you did this.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a really cool concept where you put, you kind of record the entire arena and you don't let the camera move. And if you record everybody all day in a very fancy way, you can put two runs on top of each other and watch exactly how your run compared to someone else's, or how all three of your runs throughout a weekend compared to each other. And it's the perfect timing. I mean, I line up the timers when the timers start, you know, and finish, and you can see, oh yeah, I was faster on my first barrel, or oh my gosh, look at all this time I'm losing. And it revealed for me a lot of secrets in barrel racing that like, wow, this is where certain horses win. And this is where futurity horses win. This is where rodeo horses win. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't matter at all. And it's really cool to see. And I think, now we have a lot more of like Tanner timing, or the, you know, where they time between each barrel and mm-hmm. around each barrel. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely the more mathematical correct version. But a lot of people are visual learners. I'm a visual learner, and that's where that helped me.
That's so crazy.
They're really cool to watch. Everybody wants to see them. You can do like the 1D, 2D, 3D, 4D winner. All together, and that's always going to look the same because it's, you know, they're a half second off of each other, so they kind of look like a caterpillar, you know, kind of running through the screen. But we kind of stopped doing those. They take a lot of time and a lot of work. And everyone wants to see them. Not everyone knows how to watch them and improve themselves. They think they're cool. But they don't necessarily know how to use it as a training tool.
Yeah.
And the timers are just a so much easier version of that, because you can just get it, print it, you're good. Mm-hmm. The Ghost Videos, they take hours to set up, hours to download, hours to create. And, you know, it's one of those things that I'll pull them out every once in a while, but it's going to be, you know, it has to be something real special.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, that's, you're right. A lot of people are visual. Sometimes you don't see what you're doing until you take yourself off your horse and look at it. You know, you have to see, because you could, you know, a lot of people could be, I remember riding, you sitting there thinking, I'm bouncing all over that. You feel like you're bouncing all over the place, or you're like all this and that. And then you see yourself in a video or a picture and you're like,
oh, right.
Okay. All right. I'm not doing that, but I am doing this, you know? So that's really cool. That's crazy that you brought that up, because she literally said something about it. She's in Connecticut, and she's Boss Mayor Energy on TikTok, and she's really cool.
Oh,
her name's Carol. Yeah, she was on here, and she mentioned it, and I was like, okay, that's cool.
So that's one of my favorite things is for people to see how close they really are in barrel racing. And so whether it's a ghost video or a photo now too, you know, people will be like, oh my gosh, I don't want to even look at my pictures. It was such a bad run. Or I don't want to, you know, it's a waste of money. I hit a barrel. And I'm like, no, that's the perfect time to get a ghost video, when you hit a barrel, because you can see exactly why. Was your pocket not big enough? Was it too big? Was it like, how did this other person get closer in? And with photos, they think they had this terrible run, and it's such a confidence booster for them to come in and open up those images and go, oh my gosh, we look incredible. Like, this picture is incredible. And
I'm not that bad.
yeah, you look really good. Everyone looks so good. It's not, it's rare that I don't get a good picture of someone. Yeah. Like, it's all about, you know, the photographer's timing, because these horses are all athletes. You're running full speed. We'll get a good picture of you. And, you know, just trust me, go look at your pictures. They're going to look good.
What's your most requested picture? Like, is it the picture that's around a barrel, or is it one leaving, or is it like, what's your most requested picture?
So the most requested is hands down second barrel photo going around it. Like, it is the classic number one. That's what everyone wants. That's what, you know, the publishers want to put in the magazines and online and whatnot. But I personally love the stretchy shots when the horse is coming out of the barrel.
Yeah.
I think those just look so cool. It's a little different. It shows how athletic they are coming off of it, like, then how quick they are to come off of it. Sometimes it tells, you know, how far they got off the barrel, if they're kind of, you know, behind it a little bit, but, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. You can use it, like you said, some people will use it as a training tool and, you know, or someone or whatever. Now, my next question is, what's probably the biggest hurdle you had to come over in your business? Was it the actual photography itself? Was it just business, having a business in general? Or what was your biggest hurdle that you had to overcome?
That's a good one. Honestly, I think it was myself. And that being that I was never sure if I could do this for real. You know, I wanted to make it a real thing, but I knew I couldn't do it alone. My husband, he comes to all of my shows with me, and he runs my booth for me, and he is just an angel for doing that, because the last thing he's ever wanted to do in his life is be drug around to horse shows like he was as a kid. And
that
he still comes and he does all the customer service for me and talks to people all day long. And he's just so wonderful for doing that. And we're building it to that point. He's the one that really pushed me to continue doing it. And, you know, I was starting to take pictures as a hobby, and I'd go to all these little barrel races, and I'd get, you know, a little bit of a bigger contract, and I'd try harder. And he'd say, you know, Lexi, I think that you can do this by yourself longer. I think you could figure out how to upload them. I think you could figure out how to make it more efficient. I mean, that is his life. He's the most efficient person I've ever met, you know. And so he really kind of helped me find that efficiency and pushed me to continue to do it. And where I was sitting there going, oh my gosh, I don't think I can quit my corporate job. Like, that's really scary. Like, there's no stability there. And he was like, look, we'll figure out a way, you know? And yeah. I left my corporate job. That's when COVID happened. I quit my job October 2019, February 2020. All the shows got canceled. I got, you know,
he was like, at the cabin all summer.
Yeah, it was awful. But that's also when I got the call of, hey, you know, I saw some of your photos, Lexi. This is the pink buckle. We want you to come try. I had not shot anything that large. I had shot a couple futurities in Arizona that, in my opinion, were big, are still great shows for me. But, you know, now those are my smallest shows, and I had no reason to be at the Ruby Buckle, Pink Buckle, but they took a chance on me, and I'm forever grateful for that, because that was also another huge jump in my career.
It's like, sometimes it's like when something, like, you probably felt like as soon as COVID hit, like, I just made the worst decision of my life. But those are actually, because I can relate to you, because I made a big move to Georgia about 10 years ago. And as soon as I got there, I was moving to better my business. It was all for more money, more business. I was getting a business partner. And a week later, she deserted me. She abandoned me. It was the worst. Wow. It was exactly how you probably felt. Like, mm-hmm. I just made the worst decision of my life.
It's not happening. Yeah.
But if that hadn't happened, I would not be where I'm at now. So it's like almost like the really good things that happen in life come right after what you think is the worst thing that could possibly happen. It's probably exactly. a telltale, like something good is really going to happen. So this is a good thing that happened yeah. to you.
Exactly. Yeah. If I just believed myself a little harder, it probably would have been a little easier to get through those things. But, you know, I had a lot of encouragement from other people to continue going, keep going. And now the hardest thing is traveling, you know, being on the road is really hard. And, you know, there's no photographers that really last forever other than Springer. I mean, I can't believe he's still doing this. It's good for him. You know, he's done it forever. He's so historical in, you know, barrel racing photography and rodeo photography.
Yeah.
I hope I can have that much motivation to continue doing this.
Yeah.
Because it does get hard on the road. Those rodeo girls know it's hard on the road. And I limit my number of shows to keep me sane. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of animals at home too, as most of these rodeo people do. And I hope I can keep going. But every time I go to a show and it ends, and I just get so much, so many thank yous and encouragement from, you know, our little world, that it's hard to say no. I love seeing people happy.
Yeah. Imposter syndrome can be a thing. Like, it really can be. It can be something where if you get caught up in your head, like what I think what you're trying to say, you could just actually just lead yourself on into self-doubt and not get anywhere. So it takes a lot to kind of like center yourself and go, you got this. You've come this far. You can keep going. Like, you know, I don't think people realize how hard that can be sometimes. Like, it's really easy to quit. Like, it's really easy to go, you know what? I'm going to just go get a 9-to-5 and be done with it. Not that those aren't hard, but working for yourself is really hard. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, it's never ending. And it's not like you have to have necessarily a talent for something. Like, that helps. But I like to tell people, you know, like the Fallon Taylor advice of, you know, 1% every day. You can build yourself better 1% every day, mm-hmm. and then be really good at something. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if it's just, you know, riding your horses or photography or, you know, writing or whatever it might be, if you just work on it, you will build skills to be really good. You don't have to have the talent for it. If you happen to be talented in something and you work on the skill, that's where, you know, your points kind of meet in life. And where you find yourself really successful. And I hope everybody really invests the time into themselves in things that they love and build those skills, whatever it is, to find what they're passionate about, because your life can be really amazing if you do.
Yeah, yeah. But it's always scary, like when you're doing that, just like when you were scared.
Scary.
Yeah, you're like, or me too, you're like, I don't know. But then once you kind of jump the puddle, you're like, okay, well, I made it over. No problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So what's the next big event that you guys have next coming up?
1 week from today, I'm going to be at the Ruby Buckle in Utah.
Oh, cool.
South Jordan.
How many buckles are there? Because I don't know. You've got ruby, you've got pink, and that's it?
Those are the only ones I do. There's also Riata Buckle, which is mostly roping. But I don't do that show. That is a huge show on its own. They keep kind of the roping separate from the barrel racing. Pink Buckle, Ruby Buckle. Pink Buckle is one big show every year. The Ruby Buckle has three events every year. They do a central show in the spring, a west show in the summer, late spring, and then a east coast show in the fall. So that one's going to be, they moved that one up to Labor Day, I believe, weekend, and that's going to be in Perry, Georgia this year. They were in Memphis, Tennessee, which was a beautiful facility, but they wanted to see if they could get that kind of southern, more Florida, Georgia crowd coming in, and so we're going to try that. That's a brand new facility for us, and we're really excited to try it.
I didn't know that. I had no idea it had three separate shows.
Yeah, yeah. They try to get give everybody an opportunity, and there's so much money to win, so many big side pots. You know, it's worth it to at least come to one, if not hit that central show and then whatever coast you're closest to, because it's it's a fun time. It's a very professional event. Like, you have a good idea of when you're going to run. It's easy. It's calm. There's no chaos. It's just a good barrel race.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Everybody loves that. No drama. You don't want any drama.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of ordeal. How did you, I guess we could talk a little bit about your farm animals, I guess. How many animals you got out there?
Oh my goodness. We have a lot of animals. I have 4 horses of my own. 2 of them I compete with, 2 of them I don't. We have 2 mini donkeys. We got 2 parrots. We have 2 dogs. My husband is a falconer, so we have hawks and falcons at our house.
Really?
And we've
Do you
got
have to have a license for that?
At our property. Yeah, he has a literal license for that.
That's cool though.
Yeah.
Check that out.
It's really cool. That's how a lot of my friends know him is, like, they're like, he's the guy that would walk around with your horses with a bird on his fist. And sure enough, yeah, he just.
Talk about being desensitized.
Exactly.
You've got barrel horses and falcons. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we live a wild life for sure.
And you get to take him with you on the road? How cool is that?
We don't take those ones on the road. We leave those ones at home. We have very specific house sitters that we choose that are willing to grab a mouse and go stick it in a, you know, a cage.
Stop
where it's
it.
Gonna fly up and grab it from you, and you know, you got to use tongs and things, and it's a you know, because you don't want people who don't know what they're doing walking in a cage or anything.
I'm like, that's what's going through my brain right now. My mind's blown because I think it's cool that you get to have one, but it's also cooler that you get, that you obviously would have to have somebody feed it. I could imagine just kind of how scary that would be. Not scary, but kind of like intimidating, like.
Yeah.
Because those birds are big up close, aren't they?
Oh, they're big, yeah. And it's not like, a lot of people think like, oh, you got to watch out for their face or the wings, and like, no, you got to watch out for their feet. Like, what they're grabbing things with, because their talons are what are sharp and can hurt you.
That's cool.
What they kill with. Yeah.
So how did you end up with these birds? Like, this is so random. You don't hear people that have falcons. I don't.
Yeah, right? That was also super random. One of those callings in life that you just have to follow. And we were at our home in Phoenix years and years ago. And we came home from a barrel race. I think it was either Buckles for Bailey at South Point, or it was the NBHA Super Show at South Point. And there was a little baby bird on our porch. And it was either Memorial Day weekend or Labor Day weekend. And so we couldn't call any rescues or anything. So he was, and he's just an animal lover. If he sees a baby bird, he rescues it.
Aww.
And so he was determined to keep this thing alive, but we couldn't tell exactly what it was other than it was not a regular bird. And it kind of looked like a chicken, but kind of a, you know, a peregrine falcon, like who knows? Turns out it was an American kestrel, which is the smallest falcon in America, and it's about this big. And at the time, it was like that big.
Aww.
And he kept it alive, did all the research, and you know, did really good, and then took it to the rescue once they opened up after the weekend, and went, gosh, I really thought that was cool. I think I should look into this. And then he got his license and went, and you have to do like this apprentice program and then become
a
journeyman. And yeah, you have to you go underneath someone and they show you how to raise them and catch them. Because you can buy birds, you can raise them yourself, or you can go pick one up out of the wild. It's crazy.
This is fascinating. I'm so fascinated right now. Like, you know, I mean, like,
it really is.
You see like bald eagles and you see people that will have doves, or you see things like that, you know, but you don't hear of like pet falcons. Can I get a pet falcon?
All right.
That's so
right.
Cool.
Yeah. They're not very friendly or cuddly or anything. You just look at them. Although the one that he has now is he has another American kestrel now, and it's got a bum leg that kind of, you know, it broke its leg as a baby, and it was reset wrong, so you can't release it into the wild because it would just die. So,
oh, dang.
Yeah, so that one is very pet-like and lives inside our house, and she, you know, hangs out in the bathroom most days, but, you know, she'll fly around and she'll land on his head and just kind of chill there.
That's so cool. I mean, I'm so, I just think that's so close. That's interesting to hear that, because you just don't see it. You don't hear about it, you know, that much.
You don't. It is. It's a weird little fun fact.
What is your favorite barrel race food? Your rodeo food that you like? What's your go-to?
Oh my gosh. That is a good question. I do my best. We have rules with food when we're on the road.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just us, and we choose for our business to be one arena. You know, we can't do multiple arenas. We don't really want to hire other photographers. We want to keep it just us, because it's, you know, it's what we know, and it's efficient for us, and we know how things go. So, you know, like, you don't want to eat anything that looks questionable, smells questionable. You know, it's eat things you're familiar with. You know, if it's a frozen meal, like, do that. Like, be ready. Eat fresh things. You know, there's, I love, you know, at like Lazy E Arena, they have like walking tacos, and those are my guilty pleasures.
Oh wow!
But you know, when we're sitting there all day, my husband will go put a sandwich together for me, you know, that is, or something that is fresh, easy. I know I'm going to digest it. I'm not going to get sick from it.
Yeah.
Is if I wasn't feeling good and I needed to run to the bathroom or throw up or something, like, what's going to happen? Who's going to take the pictures? Like,
we are
very adamant about food and how that works while we're on the road. We try to stay very, very clean and healthy.
Yeah. And it'd probably add up quickly to have to spend that kind of money, because it would be fair food money. I mean, like, it would be like, you know, you have vendors set up and all that kind of stuff set up. And then once you've been to one place so many times, you kind of already know what's going to be there.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, he is the snack king. He has tried everything on the menu and all the food trucks, and he goes, okay, this is safe, this isn't. And he's got a little bit more freedom with this time. And then I go, okay, well, if that looked good, smells good, like, I will get that. Like, there was a Hawaiian barbecue truck at the Lazy E this year.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. I had it just about every day. It was so good.
What's
the
difference?
It's so unusual for it to have at a barrel race.
Yeah. What's the difference between regular barbecue and a Hawaiian barbecue?
It's kind of like it's almost like Mongolian beef ideal, but it's, or like teriyaki chicken, but it's just whatever spices and sauces they put on it is special to them. And then they do like a macaroni salad on the side and rice, and
there we go.
It was good clean food that, you know, was digestible and tasted great.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine they would have anything that bad. I don't think many of the barrel races you go to would have anything that bad, like questionably bad. I mean, I don't know, though.
No, I mean, when you're on the road and you're stopping at gas stations and things, like, you just never know. Like, you got to just be careful, or, you know, trying a new restaurant because you finally have time to go out to dinner, and you walk in and you go, oh, well, just kidding. We need to walk out.
Never mind. We're just going to get a pizza or something.
Yeah.
Well, I swear, like, some horse people, the ones that you can trust when it comes to training are the ones that aren't on the internet telling everybody how to do it.
Like, right.
You know, you get on the internet and you see people like, I'm pretty sure you get that, actually. That's probably a good question, because I had a lady on here who did design and stuff, and her daughter did photography or whatever, and they do certain, you know, events and stuff like that. And she would get the craziest comments on some of her stuff, like couch jockeys and people that want to say this and want to say that and da 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 da. What's your best response for that? Like, do you ever have to handle that type of thing? Especially on TikTok or on, you know, any social media platform.
I'm really fortunate, you know, that I'm still pretty new and fresh to TikTok and posting things. And I really do a lot of Instagram stories, not really posting too much to my Instagram. But I have a lot of friends that, like I said earlier, are models and influencers and things, and they go through it too. And I honestly don't know how they handle that, because it's, they get, you know, oh, you're doing this wrong. And that's kind of you got to believe in what you're doing is the right thing.
Yeah.
And not let people come into your space and take over what you're doing, because what makes you special is you.
Right.
And so if what you're doing works for you, you cannot listen to all these other people. But you have to be able to also filter out what works and doesn't work. So choosing the right people to listen to can be a really hard skill to learn or to know that you have to do that and not just listening to everyone and knowing when someone's giving bad advice versus good advice. And I have a lot of people that ask me, you know, hey, what's your camera setup? What's this? You know, I've been at this arena trying to take pictures and I just don't know what to do. And so for me, you know, I'm not a gatekeeper. I try to help people as much as I can. But it's all about, you know, for this world, knowing your equipment, knowing how to troubleshoot it if something goes wrong. You know, if you don't use strobes, or if you are trying to learn strobes, get out there and use them, use your equipment. And so for horses, I think it's the same thing. You need to know your horse. You need to know your equipment. You need to, you know, intimately know these things. You need to, you know, go look at your bridle and make sure all your Chicago screws are tightened and know if there's a little tear or, hey, you know, this bit isn't working for me. I should go talk to an expert and explain what I need and then have them fit me for something properly. Or if you don't know something, you know, it's okay to ask, but know that you don't want to ask Joe Schmo. You want to ask an expert in their industry. And, you know, hopefully those people are willing to help out, you know, because it might not be necessarily a barrel racing trainer that's going to be able to help you in barrel racing with saddle fitting, you know, because they're not necessarily a saddle fitter, they're a trainer. True, so if you have a behavioral problem, they can work you through that. And they might know something about saddle fitting based on the brands that they buy, because that's what works for them. But that might not work for you and your horse. So it's
we never so did important. Saddle fitting. Ever. It's so funny to see it come up, actually, because I don't know how old you are, but me, when we used to show back in the day in the 90s, you didn't have saddle fitters. Nobody did that anywhere for nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's almost crazy because it's like, I remember this, this post on the internet, and this girl was talking about what you feed and stuff like that. And I remember like thinking to myself, you don't want to know what we fed, because y'all would absolutely flip out. And we never had problems, though. We didn't have ulcers. We didn't have colic. We didn't have any of that. And it was really simple back then. But
it was much more simple.
Yeah, but kind of like what you're talking about, people will project their fears onto you. Like, they'll project what they think onto what you're doing. That's the noise that I know you've got to learn to try to figure out what people are doing or not doing.
Absolutely. That's something I like to talk about too is, I think you're going to lose my camera.
No, you're still.
Luckily I'm smiling. I'm going to get some help here in a second. Blake, I need a battery, for my camera.
It's okay.
Just the camera ran out of battery. It lasts a little longer, but it's working hard.
What's up? Yo.
The Falcon guy. That's Blake.
What's up? That's so cool. What are you doing? I'm just talking to my pet Falcon.
Sure. I'm sure he'd love to talk to you about them if you ever wanted to interview him about them.
No, I mean, No,
I
was being funny. If somebody said, what are you doing? And he could just be like, I'm talking to my pet Falcon.
Talking about birds. But, so I think it's really funny that, we talk about how like, oh, things used to be so simple and it's, you know, horses, we put so much into them and all these saddle fittings and special diets and whatnot. And it's like, well, we've specialized everything in life. You know, it's the same way we specialized horse photography. I'm a barrel racing photographer and there's rodeo photographers and there's all these things, but with horses, you know, we are creating athletes and we, you know, a track runner doesn't go run barefoot necessarily unless that works for them and that's their thing, but they have to have a specialized form fit shoe that has special spikes on it to get them to, you know, get as much grip as they can. And we're doing the same thing for horses now. We are finding better shoes, better saddle fits, better bridles, you know, better training methods to get them through these programs and get fast as possible. And that's, I think, why we're seeing our industry take off the way it does. Mm-hmm. And why there's so many different options is, you know, that not everything works for everybody. And if there's only 5 trees, well, does that work for most horses? Yeah, but like some of them, every once in a while, you're gonna need to go get a special form-fitted tree because you got a crazy horse with a sway back or something, you know? And, as annoying as it is and as expensive as it is, if you want to play the game and you want to go win the 1D at the Pink Buckle or the Ruby Buckle or the Royal Crown or NBHA Super Show, you need to set your horse up for it. And you got to set yourself up for it. Mm-hmm. We should be working out, you know, for our horses. Go for a walk, go for a run, go for lift weights. You know, you got to be able to lift your leg to get around that barrel, because mm-hmm. every stride counts, every movement counts. One step loses it. That's one of the things that I learned in barrel racing with the Ghost videos is, you know, someone would lose the race because their horse set their foot wrong on a turn. Right. You know, it comes down to having the perfect run.
Yeah.
And some of it's luck, where if, you know, that person that day had a good day, their horse was feeling it, feeling good, and that horse placed its foot perfectly every step of the way. And sometimes they don't, sometimes they slip, sometimes, you know, horses trip, horses yeah. make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're having a bad day, they have a tummy ache, or they're just tired because they didn't sleep. Like, we got to set them up for success yeah. as much as ourselves.
Yeah, no, they have a body, so you have to work their body out. Like, we could talk about this for days. Like, we could talk about all of that.
For sure.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, you could get into all of that ordeal. People will buy dressage horses to do cutting, or they'll think their mini can jump a 3-foot fence. Like, we ain't trying to get into all that. But you are right, though. You have to take care of the body. But some of it is absolutely excessive. It's marketing, and it's a company that just won't make money off of you. And the reason why yeah. I'm saying that is because, like, I had Shannon Kerr on here, and we got to talking about in depths of how they barrel race in Brazil.
Oh, yeah. Very different.
Massively. Like, you almost look at it, and you're like, they're way better. What are we doing wrong? And mm-hmm. they are a lot more simple, but you are right. Mm-hmm. You can't expect a horse that you're not exercising, that you're not taking care of, to do things that a horse that is taking, just like our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like, it is what it is. It's crazy that people don't put those two together, you know, when it yeah. comes to horses and people.
And that's the difference between a hobbyist and a professional is the, you know, professionals down in Brazil, like, that's all they do is all they yeah. they ride those horses, and they get to know them very well, and they say, okay, how do I get this horse to run as fast as possible without me getting in the way? And, you know, they might ride a little crazier than we do, but they're letting the horse work and make the most efficient pattern possible regardless of what they look like. And, you know, they're reaching down to grab those barrels because they are so close to those barrels that they're you know, they're rocking and rolling. So, you
yeah,
know,
it's crazy.
They don't care about as much of sit in the middle and get it right. And I think that's kind of the, like, schooling mentality that we put on the pressure on, you know, riding horses and things. And they're just like, oh, win, win however you can win. And we sit there and go, oh, you have to, it's so calculated. And sometimes it's just not so calculated. Sometimes you just got to go out there and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You could overthink things. Like, we just talked about that in business. You could sit there and literally overthink yourself out of yep. something that you should be doing. Like, just get up and do it. You know, like, that's the best way to
exactly
start
right.
anything. Just start.
Yeah. Go do it. Invest in yourself. Give the time. Like, that is all life is mm-hmm. what do you want to do? What do you want to double down on? If you want to spend your life learning, that's great. And you can sit there and you can read all the books in the world, but until you start experiencing and doing, you will never know how to apply the things that you learned to real life.
Right.
And
right.
you just got to go out there and do it. And it's going to be different for everyone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, what are some of the big goals that you have for your business in the next 5 years or 10 years? Where do you see yourself or like to see yourself?
Yeah. I think for me, I'm going to start, you know, I have my main events that I'm going to be doing for photography,
mm-hmm.
But I am going to be focusing a little bit more on, like, the TikTok videos and
oh, cool.
Working with brands and things and working with some other barrel racers and influencers and things. And I really enjoy collaboration and working with other creative people and bouncing ideas off them and building businesses together and things. And that's just something I've always done. And so, you know, the couple TikTok videos that we have so far that are the fun ones that have, you know, done well are
yeah.
things that, you know, I've just had in my head and thought would be funny, and people are enjoying them. And so, you know, while I want to set a goal that, oh, every event I'm going to go to, I'm going to make this great grandiose video, I can't really realistically do that at every single one. You know, it just kind of depends on how much time we have.
Right.
So I need to make sure I'm setting myself up for success by either, you know, doing those videos outside of my work hours, of, right. you know, shooting events, or, you know, collaborating with other people and saying, yeah. hey, like I'm making these videos for myself right now because that's what I have available to me. But, you know, if you would like to make a video, you know, I'm the media person.
Right. Like, right.
That's what I do. That is my business. And yeah. so, I'm working on a lot of collaboration stuff this year.
There's definitely going to be a market for that. There already is one, but it's going to get bigger because
oh, for sure.
it's like people literally watch TikTok like they do TV. And, you know,
yes.
why would you pay $30,000 for a professional commercial when you can hire an influencer for a grand or two or whatever it is
mm-hmm.
and then pay a photographer? You've got less than, I mean, I'm shooting high when I say $5,000 into something that's
yeah.
actually going to be seen by the people that are going to buy your product. Like,
exactly.
I mean, it's literally a no-brainer. So, I mean, that sounds very smart, and I think it's obviously something you should do, because literally, I mean, nobody watches TV. They are on TikTok. They are on even Facebook.
I don't even have a TV. I hear, yeah.
Even Facebook's starting to feel like Craigslist. It's like not even.
Yeah, everything's for sale.
Well, it's just not the same entertainment, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like TikTok is just absolutely growing by leaps and bounds. And it's not just the lives and the TikTok shop where you make money. It's like what you're talking about. The opportunities mm-hmm. that you're going to dive into. Like, that's where it's at. That's where it's going to be for the next couple of years.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. I mean, I've no doubt in the world that the way we're going is and have been. I mean, the Western industry, I think part of what has made me successful is knowing that the Western industry is always a little bit behind on things.
Yeah, true.
And if you look at pop culture or what is really trending now in outside of the horse world, you can see where we're going to go.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the world is already on to the next trend or the next part. And we're going, oh, well, of course, why aren't we hiring influencers? That's so smart. Like, they were doing that how long ago? Like going grassroots on that. And
mm-hmm.
for us, it's like, okay, well, you know, or for me as a media content creator, like I have those skills and I just bring them into the horse world. And that is how I did this anyway, is I was went to school for video and film and was a horse girl. And I said, how do I bring these two things together? And I just noticed that there was a quality difference. And so up-leveling that quality in the horse world was a big push for my business, and showing that there is better stuff out there than, your camera phone or, you know, just videoing regularly and doing, you know, the slow-mo videos and things.
Well, no, you are right, because you just hit on something that could be a great thing to talk about, because I had Billy Smith on here and he explained it perfectly. It's the same thing that you're talking about. It's not necessarily that the Western industry is behind as much as it's like we get closed off. The Western industry
yeah.
has a way of being like, oh, you're not welcome in. Nope, we don't want no new people. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. It just is what it is. Like, it's very
yeah.
much, very much a thing. And it's hard to kind of break through that with like, hey guys, we need to keep up with the rest of the world here. We need to
yeah.
you know, we need to do some things differently. Even, like, I'm sure you see it with photos and stuff. I see it with merch and awards, something as simple as that. Like, you see it with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, new is scary to the horse world because we
it
do
is.
Have animals involved. And we do have, it's hard to make the other world look at us like, this is an athlete, this is not a hobby. It's hard to get
mm-hmm.
activists to go, we take care of these animals, they're not being abused, calm down. You know, it's hard
yeah.
to get past that. So I'm really glad that you said that, because I thought for a minute I was kind of like the only person that saw that. Like, you feel like you're like in this industry
yeah.
where you're like, guys, y'all are late to the game, let's go.
Yeah, and it does feel that way, but really you know, the kind of glasses half full version of that, and something that I have really adopted recently in my life, is that the saying that evolution is creative. You know, the evolution of anything in life is just getting creative about it. And someone's sitting there, you know, ruminating on, okay, how can I do this better, more efficiently? And that's how we improve and do better and find the things that we do. You know, there's tried and true ways to do certain things that are going to work. And that's how a lot of photographers work. And, you know, hey, pull out your card every 25 riders and go upload them. You'll never lose a photo. That's true. That's a tried and true way. That's going to always work. People will do it, take the pictures, edit them later. You know, that is going to work. You want to be different? Do it faster. Do it better. Do it. How do you do it better? How do you stand out? And that's getting creative and sitting there and getting more efficient or better. How do you do that? Anything in the world, you know, it can apply that to themselves.
I always wondered how quick y'all do that, because God bless your soul. Like, Photoshop is a whole nother thing, and you're just like, I can't imagine having to sit there and edit that many photos. Like, there's got to be a lot of photos in one run, and to sit there and have to go through all of them, and it's literally like y'all have them ready within, it feels like a day or two. You're like, and I've seen people almost rush you.
Oh, I have them ready within seconds.
See?
For me, it's seconds. It's, you know, I take 7 photos per run. That means, so then there's 5, you know, runs before the drag. I have a system. Well, what really helps is just being consistent in my lighting. And, you know, I do indoor events on purpose because I can have specific lighting there. If I was outdoor, I could do that too. But then my computer overheats because it's working so hard. But, you know, if I can have my lighting done properly, I only have to do so much to my editing. I can, you know, and I can keep that consistent throughout each photo. And then I can upload it to, you know, my software or however, you know, my back end system, so that it goes onto my website immediately, so that those people can be off their horse and on their phone looking at their pictures and making adjustments for their next run, or, you know, buying them to, you know, tag their sponsors, or, you know, just to talk about the race. One of my favorite things that we do is all our photos at the Ruby Buckle and the West Coast Finals are free to download.
Oh, cool.
That is sponsored usually by, you know, like Hachicks or Cinch or someone, you know, those brands will come in and they'll pay for that sponsorship to happen. And then I just upload them with their watermarks, whoever the sponsors were.
Yeah.
And you can download them for free. And then everybody is, and they're instant, right? So
yeah.
you're as soon as you're done, you can post all about it, and you don't have to buy a photo. You don't have to do nothing. So it's a great
program. That is
brilliant. It's marketing you cannot purchase. You could not do better than that. Honestly, but it's just, it's something that sets me apart from a lot of other people.
Right.
There's other photographers who are capable of doing it and can do it. I have the stage of being at the Pink Buckle for
right,
it. And so it's not necessarily a skill thing. It's just, you know, how efficient and speedy can you get?
Well, I know, I love that, because even like, you know, you see people take photos and they're ready or whatever, and you have like the do not steal thing and the whole big watermark and stuff and everything, which I can understand. That can be very frustrating, I'm sure. But to be able to find an alternative, because literally they want it for Facebook, like they want it for social media, like
that's all they want it for,
the biggest thing. And so if you could find a way, like you just said, that's brilliant. That's really smart. That's awesome.
Yeah it's a great system. Everyone wins. There's no losers, you
right
know, I make enough money that I walk away incredibly happy. The customers, all the runners, get their photos for free. They're happy. The sponsors get their logos posted everywhere all over social media.
Right.
The stallion owners get to share those photos of all the babies running. They can use them, you know, however they need to use them. It's the riders, the trainers, anybody who is anybody. So, I mean, I got like, you know, ranch dressing will sit there and zoom in on the pictures and say, hey, they're wearing a shirt that I made. Like,
boom.
Everyone wins.
I love that.
Yeah, it's so great. We love doing that.
I think that's awesome that